This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim and Kusi Chuang in the studio this morning. And we've got an exciting lineup for you, as we always do. And on top of that, today at 12:30 p.m, we've got a Facebook Live webinar where I'll be with Malik Ali, founder of BFM, and we'll be talking about online shopping. It's become incredibly important in the e-commerce world, but it's not all equal. There are lots of things to watch out for. So join us at 12:30 p.m. on BFM Facebook page. And on that note, I know Kusi Chuang wants to say something.
Well, you know, advertising is always a good thing. Any publicity is good publicity. So, you know, get it where you can, I guess. Even at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Even at 6 o'clock in the morning. Right now, let's take a look at what we've got for the next hour. Chuang, what are we talking about on the global scene at 6:30?
Well, the fact is that the virus seems to be rearing its ugly head. South Korea is reporting a second wave. I also talk about how Apple computers dislodging themselves from the Intel framework. They've got their own chips, and that's going to be seen in the new notebooks. Notebooks, right?
Yeah, that would
be great. And then, of course, we have also the pandemic-related issue of the Hajj pilgrims. Perhaps not being able to go and perform their duties this year because, again, of the pandemic.
And Noah, what about you? What do you have on your side?
One short word. Actually, not that short. Happiness.
The short word is sad, I think.
Yeah, that's sad, yeah.
So that's all you're going to tease us with? Happiness?
Yes, happiness.
That's it?
That's it.
Wow, okay, great.
I'm like sure. That, this is not Noel Lim, you know, this one.
But strategic, you know.
Strategic tease.
I mean, I know that I am now interested in what's happening because I want to know about happiness, and that's happening in about 10, 15 minutes. But in the meantime, the opposite of happiness, or at least close enough, is uncertainty. And when we come back, we'll be talking about what are some of the keys to navigating uncertainty, or at least from your point of view, let us know what you have been using to navigate through uncertainty. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at BFM Radio or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. And I know what's certainly not uncertain, the fact that I like Dancing in the Dark by Bruce Springsteen. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Kusi Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning, and that was Dancing in the Dark by Bruce Springsteen. Right now, we're taking a look at uncertainty, and the only real thing that I think is more uncertain than what's out there in space or what's beneath the ocean is what does the future hold? I think if you look at any movie that has ever tried to predict the future or what the future could look like, they've fallen short in quite a few things. I mean, I still don't see flying cars.
Not yet, but hopefully in our lifetime. So I know three things.
No, got flying car.
Where in your
made
head?
In Malaysia?
Oh yes, supposedly yes. Under the previous government.
But they're actually 4 KDK fans stuck together by sellotape. Actually,
4 KDK fans with sellotape. That sounds stuck like together. My secondary school, bro. That's how the fans were kept on the ceiling.
Made in Malaysia, mate. Proudly.
Yeah. So I was going to say three things are certain: death, taxes, and uncertainty.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Or rather change. This thing about, you know, uncertainty, I think it's about this advice I got. You just have to roll with the punches. Yeah, it's just something that's going to be there, you know, throughout your life, right? So it's how do you roll with the punches, and of course, from a career perspective, it's always about, you know, you keep upskilling and reskilling so that you stay relevant.
Basically, the only thing that is certain is uncertainty, right? And anytime you feel like things are going, I'm a bit paranoid. Not paranoid, maybe I am paranoid. The fact is, like, when everything is going good, I always feel like something bad's about to happen.
Well, you know those Eastern philosophies, right? Impermanence. It's the same thing, right? You can never accept that something is rooted in permanence because it isn't, right? We know this for a fact. It's just become more manifested in everyday life. And sometimes students or undergrads ask me, hey, you know, uncle, what's the most important skill to have in the future? I say adaptability. It's very important, right? Because if you study law and if you did just graduate from law, maybe in 10 years, maybe in 5 years, you won't have a job. Same thing for medicine. Same thing, right?
Yeah.
And the robots are taking over. They are.
I don't know whether the Terminator is here just yet, but one of the things that I think a few weeks ago, I spoke to Aaron Tang, who is a financial blogger at Mr.Stingy.com, and he pointed out this Daniel Kahneman quote, which is, the correct lesson to learn from surprises is that the world is surprising. And we were talking about lessons that he learned from the pandemic and he was observing out there. And, you know, in the last 10 years of the bull run, or at least, and not to say the bull run is dead, it's back, but in the economic growth that we've seen, right, synchronized global growth and all of that jazz, it maybe came to a point where we thought that this was always going to be the way it is, even though we inherently know that it's never going to always go up, right? But for people my age, our entire 20s and in early 30s were defined by this global growth, which has now come to a stuttering position right now.
Yeah, so I think for the you know, in the past, I think you'll see every cycle one major crisis, right? But now it's going to be little crisis all the way. And so I think, and to your point where you say when good things are good and you're wondering when the bad thing will surface, conversely, when things are bad, it also means that some good things eventually come. Yeah, so it works in cycles.
Okay, so the whole idea about telling children to be this or that, that's quite well settled, right? It's less well settled when it comes to people of a certain vintage. For example, if you're in your late 30s or in your 40s or, God forbid, in your 50s and 60s, you lose your job or you lose your the one thing that you used to identify with, and then your whole prospect, your whole self-esteem just crumbles, right? How do you advise older people to deal with an era of uncertainty? Because they've come from that old world, right? They've come from that era where they were told by their parents to go and get a job, you know, study hard, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, and I think it makes it even more difficult, if you empathize a bit there, is because they would have held a job maybe 40 years, right?
Yeah.
And whereas today, even within my generation, there's always this perception where no career is going to be more than 3, 4, 5 years.
That's right. Right?
And then if for my younger brother, who's about 10 years younger than me, that generation is incredibly different because they grew up in an age where the internet was always, I don't think he ever knew dial-up, but digitally connected from the very start. So they are used to seeing technology change in a blink of an eye. And I wonder how that really translates into their adaptability. Because if your world is constantly changing, does that mean that you are more adept at adapting?
Yeah, so I have a friend who represented Malaysia in SEA Games and all that, right? And his little daughter is not that impressed. You know, she said, "Hey, Dad, can you be a YouTuber instead?"
Wow! Right.
So you know, the values have changed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and also another thing about, you know, there will be a certain group, maybe in the 40s, 50s, where they are, you know, quite attached to their jobs and all that.
And also, they identify with those jobs,
yeah,
right?
And also to put this in perspective, they are also at the age where they are paying off their house loan. They are needing to ensure their kids get to college and all that. So there's a lot of financial constraints they have to deal with. So that's the added pressure. So I think one conclusion is that apart from the job, it's not to just get attached to material things.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess this ties into the whole idea of what happiness entails, right? And I've got a very, I've been chasing that whole idea for a number of years, and I've got my own theories. Like, let's just
do. You want to save it for the next talk?
I sure do.
You want to? You've been chasing the happiness unicorn, Chong?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people do without realizing it. Even young people, right? But just a word to the elder in terms of adaptability. The whole thing has to be they've got to square it in their heads, right? Because if you don't square it in your heads, you're bound for misery down the line.
And on that very pleasant note, there, Chong, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll be talking about what some of the best advice on happiness that you've heard. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Noel Lim and Kusu Chong in the studio this morning. That was MGMT with me and Michael, released back in 2018. Actually, not that far back, but back enough. Right now, we're talking about happiness. And I know Kusu Chong has got a lot to tell us about the sage advice of the Eastern philosophers.
He's dying to go.
We should be thinking about happiness. But I turn to Noel Lim first. Noel, what do you have to tell us about happiness? What's the best advice you've ever received?
It depends on what happiness means to you. So in my case, it's peace of mind and having some purpose when I get off the bed. So peace of mind, so that would then relate to health. I think that's quite big at a certain age. Also money, you want to make sure that you have enough passive income to tide you over when you retire. And relationships, yeah. So that gives me peace of mind, meaning you don't want to surround yourself with toxic people.
Yeah.
No time for that. And in terms of meaning, I think it's like just doing what you feel feels true to you.
Wow, that's very deep. Actually, I didn't have money and purpose in my head.
So now, are you reevaluating your advice, George?
Yeah, he's just thinking whether to buy an iPhone or an Android phone.
Well, three things for me. Simplicity. So a lot of people chase things when they're younger. It's not about accumulation. It's about having just the basics in your life. And I think once you come to terms with that, I think it's a big thing. Gratitude, I think, is another one where you're just grateful for. If you're happy with what you have and where you are, you'll never be unhappy, right? And I think the third thing is relationships. You need to have people around you that you love and care for. And I think parenthood is a big thing. If you don't have that, then your mates, you know what I mean? Because if you can't hang out with your mates, then what's the point of having anything?
Chuang, very, very true words there from the both of you this morning. And I relate to that. So when I was much younger, let's say just after secondary school, I was that guy, right, that always wanted to, I got to do everything. I got to, you know, take over the world. And a few years later, I felt quite sick with a chronic illness. And things change, right? Your perception of the meaning of life completely changes because you reprioritize things, and the material things don't matter when you can't even rely on your own body. So that really changes the perspective of things. And that's when I kind of realized that one piece of advice, which is your happiness really depends on your base, right? If you expect big things out of your life and sometimes unrealistically so, right? Because you maybe growing up, you were told that the world is your oyster and you are a unique snowflake, and which I was, right? I was told all these things.
Actually, you do resemble the unique snowflake.
I do, a little bit, a little bit there. But, you know, it really does change your perspective on life and what you expect out of life. And if you can change that expectation, you can be a little bit happier. But end of the day, happiness isn't the goal, right? Because, I mean, if you aren't going to be happy all the time, and that's part of life. There are times you're going to be frustrated because of work. You're going to be upset because something has happened in life. We were talking about uncertainty before this. The world is anything but certain.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I think changing the base effect can really make things feel better. At
changing
least.
The base effect,
you know, low base effect. If you're expecting a lot of things, you've got a high base effect. I'm not sure if I'm using these terms correctly. But yeah, and Chuang, what was some of the best advice you've heard? That's the way you look at it. But has anyone ever told you something that really connected with you?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't had that many mentors. You know, when you're young, you're told to go and seek out these people. Unfortunately, I haven't had the benefit of those things. So I've had to experience them myself. And the one of the big moments is when I was in East Coast with my then ex-girlfriend, right? And you know, we were on the beach. The wind was blowing hard. It was really cool and reinvigorating. And then I was just walking with her to the beach. And then it just made me realize, right, this sensation of your natural surroundings, the person that you care for at that point in time, you didn't have to pay cover charge. You didn't have to join a gym. You didn't have to go and get access to some privileged club. You could just go to the beach like any other normal Joe, and you could feel these things. And then I realized you don't need a lot to be happy in this world. And that was a long time ago. That's like 15 years ago.
What about you, Noelle? Single best advice you've heard?
I think it's important to just accept yourself for what you are. And your whatever situation that you might be. So underlying, I say, you know, relationships, money and health and all that. I think it just comes down to me that, you know, one thing I know, I don't like material things, right? I really don't want to accumulate those things. When I look at my books, just books even, yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to give this to the library and all that. And I think what's important to me now is experiences and memories.
Right. And right now, let us know. You should let us know what's the best advice that you've heard about happiness. I really do want to learn. Let us know over on Twitter at BFM Radio, or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We're going into the 6:30 AM News Bulletin. And to take you there, Wonderwall by Oasis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. That was Move On Up by Curtis Mayfield off his debut album named Curtis back in 1970. You're here with them on here with Roshan Gunnison, Noel Lim, and Koo Soo Chuang. Right now, we're taking a look at stories across the globe, and we're starting in South Korea. Chuang, what's happening in that country?
Well, back in the day, at the end of February, South Korea was one of the biggest hit worst hit countries with coronavirus after China. They had over 900 people infected in a single day, but then they took a very aggressive stance towards the pandemic, and they actually got it down to single digits. But just as they're about to reopen, right, a new cluster emerged, and this actually was identified to have begun in May during holiday weekend, where a whole bunch of people started going out to nightclubs and discos and all that. And now it's gone back up again. So it's basically the second wave as officially confirmed by the South Korean government, which is not good, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, more of overall, South Korea has been looked at the model for dealing with COVID-19 and how well they did it at the start. The fact that they could draw an election during that time period, because that's how important the election is to them. And generally, just how they've maintained, how they've gone about this entire business of it. But it is, we were always expecting a second wave, I think. I think that's something reasonable to see. It's just about how we prepare for it and how we deal with it going forward. Noelle, was there anything in the story that caught your eye specifically?
Yeah, so they officially confirmed it as a second wave. And when we say second wave, they're talking about 17 new infections in the last 24 hours. Now, 17 might look like a small number, but, you know, it's 17 times 2 times 2 times 2, right? You know, it gets exponentially higher if you don't contain it properly. And the thing is, you know, Korea has a formula how they're dealing with this, right? At the get-go, I think they really learn from their MERS experience and the Middle East respiratory system virus. Yeah. So I think what they really learn from that is to have your own local suppliers. That's why they could make PPEs very quickly. They could, you know, get all the antigen and all that test kits up very quickly because they got their pharmaceutical companies together and say, okay, we need to produce something like this. And that's why they could go on a real massive testing. And I think we are buying from South Korea too. So I guess they will deploy the same formula. So like you say, it's going to be the same for all. In fact, Malaysia, we also need to be quite careful as we are slowly reopening our economy. And we also see that in China, right? China's also reporting some cases and they are doing all these mini lockdowns.
Yeah, and you know, South Korea saw their daily cases from nearly 1,000 to zero infections they had for 3 days in a row, or at least recorded infections. And then now they're that's why the 17 jump there is a significant, right? Because as you mentioned, Noel, it's the exponential curve that is so concerning overall. And that's why we go back to what we were talking about months ago. Flattening the curve is always that priority. You don't want it to, one, overburden the healthcare system, and two, don't want to get out of control. So again, everyone just do your part in terms of your own physical distancing, wearing your mask, washing your hands. I think that's the biggest thing you can do. But moving on to more COVID-19 related news, Saudi Arabia has basically banned international visitors from making the pilgrimage or the Hajj this year. And this, again, in a bid to manage the coronavirus.
Yeah, that's why social distancing is so important, because when you have a huge number of people in proximate situations, you all have the virus infecting, because it is airborne, right? So Mecca normally is where everybody goes if you're a Muslim to go and get your, you know, you perform your duties as a Muslim, and that's a very big thing. It's a hallmark event in your lifetime, and so it would otherwise have seen 2 million visitors on an annual basis. But it makes sense for the government, the Saudi government, to say, look, we can't have that this year, because obviously they've already got 160,000 infections, about 1,300 deaths, so they don't want that number to bulk up again. As with any other country around the world, you ban concerts, you ban theatres, you ban live events, you ban religious gatherings, right? And that's precisely for that reason.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. So I think last month, Malaysia had already said no Hajj for Malaysians going there. But they say they will compensate them accordingly. And I think for next year, hopefully they will allow it. So I think Malaysia and individual countries have already said, there's no performing of Hajj this year. They're not allowing their citizens to leave the country to do this.
Yeah, I think it's the important thing to recognize is just the mass gatherings, right? Because the virus essentially spreads through droplets, and if you're crowded, that's why the physical distancing element works, right? You want to get out of the way of those droplets that are flying in the air from your breath or your coughing or whatever it is. And that's very important, and that's why you wash your hands and don't touch your face and things like that.
And I just want to quickly add, there are a lot of Malaysians who work in that region, right? Saudi Arabia, either in the oil and gas sector or in various sectors. And so it's also very difficult because they either cannot go back, come back to Malaysia to see their families, or they cannot go to the Middle East because they might not be able to get in, right, until for a certain period of time. So it's also very awkward, I think, for Malaysians, not just for Hajj, but also for work purposes.
And right now we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll be taking a look at the local side of things through the papers and the portals. Stay tuned. This is BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Kusi Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Unknown Mortal Orchestra with Shakedown Street off their 2016 album Day of the Dead. Right now, we're taking a look at the papers and the portals, taking a look at the local scene. Noel, what do you have with you?
Yes, the Malaysian Reserve. So on the front page, will Petronas finally submit to Sarawak's tax demand? So I think all eyes are currently focused on Putrajaya's Court of Appeal, which will happen today. As observers and industry players anticipate Petronas' next move in its ongoing fight for control over petroleum resources in Sarawak. So to give some background here, Wan Zulkifli was a former CEO of Petronas. He had staunchly opposed the demand for more oil revenue from Sarawak and apparently had resigned on those grounds because simply I think he wants to conserve cash for Petronas, right? So he doesn't want to give in to paying those taxes. And so the Court of Appeal in Putrajaya has scheduled a hearing by Petronas today against this High Court decision, which compels Petronas to pay Sarawak's sales tax. So we're going to see how that plays out, because obviously that will have an impact on us because Petronas basically funds our budget. And this other piece of news is buried in page 7 because simply it's an ongoing saga. But I just want to kind of bring this up. DAP and Amanah, I think they issued this letter and I saw it circulating on the WhatsApp chat groups. So what they're asking for is really for, you know, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim and Tun Mahathir to really resolve their issues, right? And so Amanah and DAP are proposing, or rather they put out a joint statement to say they want to have 6 months, have it in writing that if, you know, that Mahathir will step down in 6 months and hand over the reins to Anwar. So, but I'm not sure whether Mahathir will agree to something like this.
Yeah, and I've just got just continuing on that, I've got Malaysia Kini in front of me, and Dr. Sri Anwar Ibrahim spoke to Channel News Asia and basically talking about the fact that Tun Mahathir can be a cabinet member, but he's still of the opinion that he should not be a third time prime minister. Chuang, you've got some papers in front of you as well. What are you looking at?
Well, I've got a couple of business news items and something of an op-ed from one of our professors. Starting with Kendall Court, actually. Kendall Court is a Singapore-based mezzanine private equity kind of firm, and they've actually exited Green Packet in full, completely, in the last couple of days. I think they had up to 10%, 11% of the business, which they've now disposed of. I think they made some good money from that. They bought in about 70 cents last year, and they sold out at about 80 cents, so they're out of that stock completely now. RubberX has gotten an unconditional mandatory takeover offer, and of course, RubberX is a small cap glove maker. They have received this takeover offer for all their shares from Hexstar Rubber and Dato Ong Chun Ming for a cash offer price of $1.80 per share. But what has really grabbed my attention is the op-ed by a professor named Professor Dr. Muhammad Tajuddin Muhammad Rasti. He's an architecture professor at UCSI.
And whom we've had on the show.
Whom we've had on the show a few times. He's writing in his own section on page 12, and he's talking about the death of a nation. And it really centers on the fact that if the people of a country cannot trust each other and they want to say that they can do one sector of the people can do without the other, then it is really a defect from the founding principles where, you know, you are founded on the principles of unity and cohesion, and then now one group of people say they can't do without the other, then it is really the start of the end for that nation.
Yeah, so I just want to add on to that story because the Straits Times in Singapore, Foreign Minister Vivian Balakrishnan, he had given a speech, and I just want to just quickly recap because he says Singapore is a small country, and by extension, actually, Malaysia is also a small country. But you know, in this very complicated world that we are living in now, right, it's very dangerous and it's a divided world. And he's saying that for Singapore to really survive and thrive, there are a few principles they need to stand on. They have to stand firm on rights and uphold laws, and they have to maintain a good reputation and trustworthiness, and also the identity, values, sense of duty and worth. So I think these are values that, you know, he's espousing. And I think it makes perfect sense. And I wonder, in the context of this, where Malaysia stands.
Yeah, definitely things that we need to think about as a nation. And speaking of the Straits Times, I have the new Straits Times. And with the headline, Lights, Camera, Action, very specifically, cinema, theatres and live event spaces can reopen from July 1st, but with strict SOPs as per the rest of the industries, and also pools. So take a look at that if you want to read more about it. But right now, we're going into a few messages and then the 7 a.m. news bulletin. When we come back, will the tech rally ever end? We'll ask Joe Quinlan of U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management to take you through that, through the news. Back in Black by AC/DC, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.